Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome. Do you want to do the intro?
No. I'll just get it wrong.
I get it wrong all the time. Welcome to the Horror Hangout, a podcast where two bearded film fans watch the best and worst horror movies of all time. My name is Luke Condor with a K, and I'm joined by my regular co-host, Ben Errington. Mr. Ben Errington.
To you.
I told you to get it wrong. With an E.
With an E at the start, and E in the middle of my first name as well. Didn't you know it?
Ben's got the bottle of fizzy water.
It's not fizzy, it's still.
Okay.
I've got a glass bottle of posh tap. It is tap water. That's the truth.
Council pop.
Tastes like council pop. Yeah. Fizzy council pop. It's not fizzy. Bristol's best. Straight out of river.
Nice. Does it taste good? Good. Exceeding German in your face there. I've got coffee. Instant coffee. Not the posh coffee.
Instant. Click your fingers. Bang. There it is in your hand. Ooh.
Like that.
Instant coffee.
Oh, and my hand.
Would you like some instant coffee? No, I want it to take an hour, please.
Yeah, there's like slow drip coffees that take like 24 hours, ain't you? The long drip ones.
Jesus, what a hipster.
Exactly, yeah. This is the podcast where we talk about stuff, but every now and again someone wants to listen to us talk about stuff. And we've got a listener talk to us recently about listening to us, and her name is Laura Mallon. And I just want to give a quick shout out to her. Thank you for listening. Thank you for enjoying the show. And thanks for getting in touch. It's very, very sweet of you.
Thank you. Very nice. No, I didn't say that. Not once. Not even off air.
No, he didn't.
No. I smiled and nodded in appreciation of the appreciation.
Yeah.
That's difficult to say. But thank you. But did she also suggest something that we should, or ask if we were going to possibly review a certain film?
Hellraiser. That's what she said.
Hellraiser. Never heard of it. Oh yeah.
That's strange
that we haven't got around to doing that one, have we?
Yeah, that's like more so than Phantasm. I mean, I feel like Phantasm should have been on one of those lists, but Hellraiser, how has that not been on a list so far?
Yeah. I think there was a point where I think we were discussing maybe doing some Clive.
Yeah.
But for some reason we never got around to it. Flaky. That's us.
What? Yeah, I mean, we'll still do it. I mean, I went for a bit of a Clive period recently. I feel like I need to take a little bit of a break, but I'll be back on him soon.
You'll be back on him soon. Worry. You need a little break of a few hours or a few days or however long you need.
Yeah.
And get back on it.
Yeah.
So, the thing, we could do it because we've got forever to do it in. This show could go on forever. Not forever, but, you know, there will be a time when we both just go, that's enough now.
And then we die
immediately after. Podcast is done. Well, there's nothing for you to live for.
Okay, yeah. So stuff and the guffs. Have you done a guff? You done a stuff?
Stuff and the guff and the guffs. You know what? So it has been 2 weeks since the last episode, and I've been kind of watching some films that I kind of want to do episodes on. So probably not.
Oh, okay, you're going to hold back.
I'm going to hold back. There's no point, you know, blowing my beans in one
fell swoop.
So I guess all I've really got to talk about is just a couple of cinema trips recently.
Okay.
So I saw Shazam, the latest DC comics thing, and, you know, it's good. It's funny. But it's like a good, it's a feel good film, but, and it also feels a bit like Big, Tom Hanks, Big, feels all that big. Stuff. Don't
feels
really
big.
Seen Zachary.
Feels good.
Okay. It was big and good.
Yeah.
I haven't really seen Zachary Levi in much. I didn't
see
watch
a TV
Chuck.
Guy or something. What is he? Oh, the Chuck.
Yeah. Chuck dude. But you know, he was good. And it's, I think DC, what they've decided to do is go, right, okay, instead of trying to build a world with every single film with one eye on the next film, we'll make a nice standalone film that obviously exists in that universe, but it's not like smashing you over the head with it.
Yeah.
I mean
it's smart, actually. I think it works.
Yeah, and I mean, it's good. I thought the world building was good. The villain was like, all right. There's loads of stuff missing from like the trailer. Again, I saw like a trailer for this. There's loads of stuff missing from the trailer, which was good. Stuff that was like a nice surprise. So I wholeheartedly recommend Shazam. And then I also saw Hellboy, Neil Marshall's Hellboy.
Neil Marshall, we've talked about Neil Marshall on the show a couple of times.
Yeah, so we've done The Descent and we've done Dog Soldiers of Neil Marshall. He hasn't done a film for a while, is that right? Has he been doing...
Well, he did Doomsday, didn't he? He did Game of Thrones episodes. It's weird because everyone always says Neil Marshall from The Descent and Dog Soldiers, and that's it. Yep. But they never mention Doomsday. And I remember quite liking
that. Doomsday, 2008, that was.
Yeah.
I don't remember it very well, but I've definitely seen it.
Yeah.
So he has been strangely absent from a lot of the press for Hellboy, and I've heard a lot of things on the grapevine about creative differences and creative control with the studio and all that nonsense. And then, of course, the reviews came out, and, you know, I think it debuted at like 9% on Rotten Tomatoes. And then I read a few reviews as absolutely tearing it down, comparing it to the likes of the latest Fantastic Four, the Josh Trank Fantastic Four, and Suicide Squad, kind of just saying it's one of those completely soulless superhero blockbuster jaunt things. But I actually kind of enjoyed it, and it's not, you know, it's not perfect, and I mean it's not even great, but it gets a lot right. I think David Harbour as Hellboy is really good. A lot of the creature effects are really good. Some little subplots are really sort of engrossing. Perhaps they weren't too relevant to the plot, but they did kind of help me get an idea of the world. Some of the exposition, some of the dialogue is a bit naff. So, you know, and
the jokes in that, you mean?
Yeah, but some of the jokes are really good. I found myself kind of chuckling along a few times. But yeah, it's been absolutely destroyed by critics. But I think if you kind of enjoy it for what it is, popcorn blockbuster. Yeah, but
is like for diarrhea. It's like a tablet, isn't it?
Yeah. We've all been there, Luke, haven't we? But yeah, so I enjoyed it. And that's all I got to say on it, right, mate? Don't push me any further.
I'm not saying anything bad about it. I didn't like the look of the I don't know, the art style and stuff. So I was never too invested in going to see it. But I'll get around to it.
I think in terms of, I mean, it's obviously going to be compared to the Del Toro versions. However, those versions have got their own identity, and this doesn't feel like it's trying to replicate any of that, despite the fact that loads of it does look kind of similar, but that's just because
it's Hellboy.
You can't make it look all that different, but it doesn't feel like it's trying to copy any of that too much.
I feel like this one looks a little bit like, you know, Tim Curry in Legend.
Definitely. I mean, he's terrifying in that.
Yeah,
but I mean, it's great Hellboy. I mean, one of my things that after seeing the trailer, I was a bit like, he looks awful as Hellboy, and it's like they're trying to make it too much of a comedy.
Yeah.
And although, some of the lines that I just enjoyed his portrayal of Hellboy was like this world weary, cynical, sort of half assed. Do you know what I mean? That sort of character. Whereas I think Ron Perlman, obviously awesome as Hellboy, but I always find him a bit like oversensitive. He used to get in strops, didn't he? He used to get in strops.
I feel like a big toddler. I think that's what we're going for. Yeah,
a big toddler. And even though there's kind of like a bit of that in this version of Hellboy, it doesn't, like, I think overall, it feels like a really good, well-rounded performance. And he kind of anchors everything together, I think, because some of the other performances, Ian McShane dials it in a little bit. He doesn't seem doesn't seem too bothered. Mila Jovovich is kind of just a bit shit, but maybe that's just because I'm not a fan of hers.
Fifth Element,
yeah. That's the only good film she's ever been in, right? Has she ever been in another good film? Name it.
I don't know.
Name it!
Spoop! That's me dying.
That's me done. That's how you get out of everything, isn't it? You're on the phone. Would you like to? Have you been sold PPI? Have you put the phone down, or are you dead?
Is that you, or is that a, what do you call them? Cardiometer. What do you call it? Heartometer.
Death machine.
Yeah.
Go on, then. That's me done.
Is that you
guess.
Done? Okay.
Yeah.
So I watched Shape of Water on Blu-ray. Jesus. on Blu-ray. Shape of Water. I watched it when it first came out, but I was kind of middling on it. When I first saw it, I just kind of felt like I didn't really understand what they were going for. It just seemed a little bit like, I don't know, I just, for whatever reason, the tone of it just didn't hit me. And this time I was like, I understand it, but it's an homage to cinema, just like in general. It's like really stylistic, really kind of lovely. I mean, it's still the bit where he eats the cat, and I still feel that's a little bit abrasive. But then again, Guillermo del Toro's films always have that element.
Yeah,
it's always a fairy tale whimsy, but then there's always some kind of over the top violence in there, just to, like, the fingers in this film where Michael Shannon sort of rips his fingers off.
Jesus, Michael Shannon's good in that film, right?
Yeah,
he's a scary bastard. He's probably the scariest eyes in cinema.
Yeah,
just freaks me out.
He's good. This film is good. I mean, I think it's I'd give it like a 4 out of 5. That sort of 4.5 out of 5. It feels pretty much
4.5 out of 5. That is a 9 out of 10.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like a very incredibly solid film. I can't think of many films that have been put together as well as that. You know what I mean? In terms of the production design, the character design, the dance movements. Richard Jenkins is always good.
Pretty much everything he does is good. I've only seen it once, so I would like to see it again, because I think I saw it like on release, so that would have been like early 2018 in the UK. So
it's nice to watch it past now the hype sort of died down a bit. You can watch it from afresh and just sort of see it for what it is.
It's nice to know. It's nice to watch something from afresh, knowing that like it's won a major Oscar, such as Best Director, and kind of take it all in from that standpoint. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And then I also watched Twelve Monkeys, Terry Gilliam's 12 Monkeys, which I haven't seen in, I can't remember even watching it. I mean, I have seen it. I knew all the film, knew it very well, but I was like, I don't know when I watched this. Must have been in the future. Must have been in some alternate timeline. It just seems like a different me watched it. But it's, I had a certain sort of idea of what this film would be, and it's way more weird than that, in the sense, like the way it's filmed, the way the characters talk, it's very cartoony, but it does work. And the music's got like weird European sort of harpsichord sort of thing going on. But it's full on Terry Gilliam. Like it's like 95, I think it came out. This is when Bruce Willis really put like himself into the roles. Like here he plays like a boy who never grew up properly. Like he's still kind of a child in this sort of adult world. He cries all the time, gets angry all the time, and can't deal with the reality of everything. But he's like so involved and invested in what he's doing. And Brad Pitt as well is like, playing an absolute fruitcake.
Absolute fruitcake. I think I saw this film. I think maybe my mum rented it when I was quite young, and I watched it, and we both hated it. We were both like, "This is awful. Why are we even watching this? What's going on?" And I remember it kind of like lingered in my head, in my subconscious for a long time as being like one of the worst films I'd ever seen, simply because obviously I was too young to really understand and take it in. And then I watched it sort of, I guess, in my early 20s, and I was I was like blown away by it. I was like, this is amazing. Well, all stupid 10-year-old me.
All the time travel stuff works really well. Like, it's kind of, most time travel films, they don't really have much of a sort of clear logic to it. But this does, it sort of keeps its internal logic all the way to the end. And the actual ending is beautifully done. Like, and it's, I think it's the ending that sort of ties everything together and makes you kind of, it makes it stick in your head, where he sees his own, he realizes that he'd seen his own death, like as a boy. It's, yeah, really good. Like,
yeah, I'm not, again, another one I haven't seen in a fair while, so yeah. Probably a revisit needed.
I mean, that's, just to throw things, throw the toys around, that's A minus for me, that is.
Interesting. Yes. A minus, it's up there, isn't it? It's definitely up there. Making me want to watch it even more now. Maybe I'll watch it tonight. Who knows?
Yeah, yeah. So.
Delicious.
Pet Sematary. Pet Sematary.
Pet
Sematary.
Cemetery? Cemetery.
Cemetery.
Come and Cemetery tonight. I didn't know you had a pet cemetery. Well, I don't know what I'm doing now.
Okay.
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 So Pet Cemetery is a 2019 American supernatural horror film directed by Kevin Kolsch and Dennis Widmeyer. Written by Jeff Buhler from a screen story by Matt Greenberg. Loads of people getting involved
with this.
What does that mean? I don't even know what that means. It's the second adaptation of a 1983 novel of the same name by Stephen King. After the 1989 film, film stars Jason Clarke, Amy Semetz, and John Lithgow, and follows a family that discovers a mysterious graveyard in the woods behind their new home. Mysterious, this graveyard.
So, one thing. So, Matt Greenberg did the screen story. I thought that was a screenplay. Maybe that's something different. I don't know.
Have you finished that screen story yet?
What is it? Is it a bullet point list of what's happened in the film?
Yeah, just a screen story, mate. Yeah. It took me 5 minutes to knock up. And you're getting paid for that. Nice.
Yeah. Well, so these directors, Kevin Kolsch and Dennis Widmer. Widmer? Vid? Well, he's got a weird name. Wid? M? Is that a V?
Widmeyer.
Oh.
Widmeyer.
I've got a V written down.
Widmeyer and Kevin Kolsch. I mean...
Okay.
They've directed a lot of mad shit.
They did Starry Eyes, and I really quite appreciated Starry Eyes for being a film that genuinely disturbed me and was like well put together, very small budget, very low budget. And did you see Starry Eyes?
No, I didn't. Starry Eyes
tonight on Starry Eyes.
Tonight on Starry Eyes, bloody horrible horror film, scared the shit out of us.
So the idea is, a young actress is working in a flipping burger shop. Where they sell flipping burger machines.
And, a flipping burger shop.
She wants to be a Hollywood actress woman. And then she's like, she quits the job. It's all about how, like, she could go one route and start doing indie movies and sort of work in the flipping burger shop while she's doing the indie movies. Or she wants to be, like, a starlet. And then it's like she kind of sells her soul. She gets a meeting. It's like a sort of weird cult. Of like Hollywood elite people that you have to get in with to
true story.
Yeah and I'm pretty sure there's some BJ action a demonic BJ action if I remember correctly. And it's got lots of body horror elements and it gets gross and weird and it's just good. It's just a really, when you think of an interestingly well done horror movie, Starry Eyes is up there. But so I was like dead excited because, well, Pet Sematary, loved the book. Love the guy who dreamed it all up in the first place, Stephen King. I love this poster, all of the Wicker Man stuff. I like that. Look cool, like childish Wicker Man stuff. That's great.
I think a lot of the sort of promotion, the promo stuff for this film has been like pretty spot on.
Yeah.
All the visuals, all the posters, a trailer was pretty good.
Jeremy Lin goes Judd. I thought that's a brilliant casting.
Yeah, great casting. Do you know what? I'm always a bit unsure on Jason Clarke. You know, especially like, because what's he been the leading man in?
He looks like an Easter Island, you know, the statue of the head.
I think
plonked on his shoulders.
I'm always a bit unsure. I'm always a bit unsure, but for some reason after watching that trailer, I was like, oh yeah, he looks pretty good. Doused in hair. But he was probably the one question mark I had about it. And also, yeah. I guess from the trailers, obviously, spoiler alert for this film.
So I didn't watch the trailers, by the way, so this was all fresh.
So you didn't watch the trailers, yeah. So in one trailer, it seemed quite, you know, vague in terms of what was going on. But then there was another trailer, which I didn't actually watch, but then I saw a few things written online saying that obviously they've taken a very key plot point to the film and they've basically just like flipped it. And that was kind of one thing that bothered me about this film. Not just that particular moment, but I guess
it has bigger implications, though. The fact that it changes a lot of what made the original story so scary, I thought.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And I think one thing that this film kept doing that did kind of annoy me was that it kept showing things that were like, if you'd seen the original and if you read the book, you'd be familiar with.
Oh yeah,
and it would go. You know what's coming, don't you? If you've seen the film and you've read the book, you know what's coming. Actually, we're doing something completely different, and we got you eating at the palm of our hands. And I just kind of felt like it just didn't work for me. Not like every time they did something like that,
it just didn't read the room very well. By the way, to the audience, I went with my friend Skip and my friend Dieter, and then about four or five randomers sort of in the cinema. It wasn't very busy at all, so it's still kind of disappointing that there just wasn't an audience really there to see it. But maybe that's because it's just been getting middling reviews.
Yeah,
left, right, and centre.
And I think it had been out for like a week or maybe just over a week. And when I went to see it, which was kind of the weekend of release, it was quite busy.
Yeah.
What were your general thoughts on it?
So I say a big fan of the book. I've got so many memories of the original movie being genuinely scary, genuinely unnerving.
Yeah.
And then this is going to sound super harsh, but it feels like they've given budget and money and resources to sort of student filmmakers or amateurish filmmakers who are just hitting the, this sounds so harsh.
Oh, that's too harsh, mate.
But it just means, like, maybe they were rushed through it, maybe they sort of were forced to do stuff in certain ways, but it feels like they were hitting all of the cliched notes of what they thought they had to hit, and it just had no bite. It was, like, completely sort of antiseptic.
It was like a gummy bite.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. There's a couple of really good scares in the film, but they're around one character, and, like, the big climax of the scariness was about halfway in the film. So after that, I was sort of bored out of my mind.
Yeah, I was incredibly bored. Like, considering this was, 1 hour and 40 minutes or something?
Yeah.
There were quite a few times I was looking at my watch thinking how much longer we got left. Yeah. I was getting like restless legs where like I just kind of felt like, oh, come on. Felt itchy. But for me, honestly, I thought it was, considering I felt pretty hyped for it.
Yeah.
Everything I'd seen, thought, you know, this was going to be, you know, we had Us 1 week and then a couple of weeks later Pet Sematary. It felt like, oh god, it's only bloody April, mate, and we're already bang into it for 2019. But honestly, I thought it was a incredibly average, like, modern horror remake. I feel like it was really trying to be clever by changing key plot points, but it just didn't work for me. I felt like it was really clunky.
Yeah.
I felt like the scares, even though there may have been one or two good scares, I feel like they were a bit repetitive.
We did the same one, like three times, I think.
Yeah. There was some real dodgy green screen during a particular scene.
Yeah.
There's clearly a lot of fog machines going on in certain bits as well.
Like foam sets. I don't mind that in the 80s, but yeah, like carved that foam sort of sets. Yeah. It's like, Jesus Christ.
And I just felt like by the time the ending rolled round and I kind of saw what was happening, my eyes were rolling so far into the back of my head that I looked like the Undertaker.
Yeah. But I mean, there's that effect that people do when they want to make a scary ghost sort of thing where something will be moving and then it'll just go fast forward.
Yeah.
Like you've got like a bee.
Like this.
In your hand. yeah. I can't stand that stuff. It seems so cheap. It's so not creative at all.
This is going to seem harsh as well, but I really wasn't a fan of the young girl playing the daughter.
Well,
she had a look on her face constantly that kind of made me feel like
She's smelling poo right now.
It's like, no, like the kind of look on her face where she's like, I'm in a film. Like she had a little bit of a, almost like a little bit of a smile, especially when she was like trying to, when she was undead.
Yeah.
I felt like there was just a look on her face. I just did not buy it.
I didn't mind her as the daughter. I think, I mean, obviously with child actors, you got to give them a bit of leeway. But,
definitely. But
as
also,
the undead thing, I think, we'll probably talk about that a bit later, but I think that's not so much her fault, but it's probably your fault because that's not scary to have a bratty little shit. It's just annoying. Do you know what I mean? It's not.
Yeah. A bratty little shit zombie child.
If it's the little boy, the toddler who can't recognize.
That kid looked exactly the same as the previous version what's the boy's name?
Gage.
Gage. He looked exactly the same. Mr. Trick. Seemed like he knew what he was doing as well.
If you have a toddler, a young boy like that who doesn't seem to recognize what's going on around him, or maybe does, but you're not too sure. When that comes back from the dead, and then you feel like there's more going on behind their eyes now than there was before, that's quite a scary sort of thing to think about. And when he starts talking about stuff he shouldn't know anything about, so I feel like they just missed a big scary. And also, the most emotional beat of the film and the book has been removed, excised from this film. Because of that change as well, which is when he has to kill his son a second time. Like it's heartbreaking in the original story. It's gone in this.
Yeah,
I don't know. I'm being too harsh, but there are some good bits, and it's like competently made. It's just,
I think the original film, like during all the reviews for this and that, people have kind of been taking down the original film, sort of saying, "Oh, the cheesy, crappy original or something," and I think the original's like kind of good.
It's got a bit of datedness to it. We like the
But what was it like? Late, so it was 89.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I always thought it was one of the better Stephen King adaptations from that era. I guess.
Yeah.
I guess it was just before it, the miniseries. So. Yeah, but yeah, I honestly thought it was a severe disappointment, and I definitely had a. I mean, it hinted at so many different things as well. Like, obviously, we saw the sort of parade of the kids with masks on taking their dog to be buried in the thing. And that was one scene.
Yeah.
That was one scene. And they kind of dropped the masks in here and there again throughout the film. But it kind of just, it held no weight. No weight for me.
Yeah. The other thing is another thing that annoys me, you know, so you got the speeding up, slowing down thing, but then whispers that are like just telling people where to go or not to go to certain places. It just, I don't know, in this maybe it's the way it was done in this film, it was far too on the nose. It was far too cartoony and simplistic. Like that kind of stuff is used as a joke, you know what I mean? Like in the Mighty Boosh, like my own friend now is the wind.
Yeah,
I hate you. Like it's you can't do that. Yeah.
It was another film, and I know we've said this a few times based on films from the past that we've watched recently. But again, this is another film that felt a bit goosebumpsy to me.
Yeah, yeah.
It felt like in places it didn't feel like a horror as such. It felt like a young adult film with horror elements at times.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think when we're talking about people, I think John Lithgow was good. Obviously, the stuff with the mother and obviously her sister who passed away from viral meningitis, again, had a pretty good scare, but had, like, in terms of what came in the original was like, oh, Jesus Christ, one of the creepiest, like, but this was just, I don't think we even got a good look at her, really, did we?
Bit of a look at her teeth.
bit of a look at her teeth and her bendy spine.
Yeah.
Apart from that, deadness.
So let's jump into the plot of it. I mean, the plot is pretty much exactly what you already know. It feels like, I don't know if they've spent enough time building up certain plot points or anything, but I don't know if you got the same impression that it just seemed like they were ticking plot points off the list as they were going through.
I don't know if you noticed this as well, but people were saying their names a lot, almost like they really wanted to hammer home the fact, like, to try and explain who was who. Like, people would introduce themselves. Yeah. Hi, I'm Rachel, Ellie's mum. Like, she said that at one point. And I'm
really? I don't remember that.
Yeah, yeah. She said, I'm Rachel, Ellie's mum. It's like, Well, it's obvious that you are. Yeah. You could just say, I'm Rachel. Oh, yeah. My name's Rachel. There we go. But she says that to what's his name?
I don't think it like trusts its audience enough to sort of pick up and like that there's sort of very little interesting interactions between the characters. It all felt very sort of staid and there's nothing sort of off the wall or nothing offbeat. It's just all so standard.
I think like Jason Clark, is that his name?
Yeah.
I think he was like bland.
Yeah.
I don't think he had the. I'm pretty sure he had the same facial expression on his face for the whole film.
Yeah.
Which was like slight confusion and concern. But I don't think he smiled at one point, even before she hit the fan.
Yeah.
He was kind of like this all the time, like, fuck, something's going to go wrong.
Is that his real accent as well?
I think he's Australian, is he not?
Oh, all right. It's, I think it's like a Boston accent, right? I don't know the accent.
I'm not sure. I can't really remember.
Yeah, it seems a bit strange to me. But, yeah, so the story is, you know, the family moving from Boston to the countryside to this house in Ludlow. He's getting a job as a doctor, accident emergency doctor, but on campus in this sort of...
On campus, yeah.
And then they've got a neighbour, Judd Crandall, who we don't know too much about, other than that he had a wife who died at some point called Norma. He smokes, he's got tobacco-stained moustache and beard and soul patch.
Yeah.
And then there's the Orinco trucks, which fly by.
Fly by at about 120 miles an hour?
Yeah.
Jesus!
And that's what you got. I mean, I think the first introduction between the family and Judd is where they see the pet cemetery, right? And they see the kids.
Yeah. I mean, it all happens pretty quickly. Yeah. Everyone's sort of introduced. So obviously we've got... So, I mean, just... So Jason Clark is Dr. Lewis Creed. His wife, Amy Semetz, is Rachel Creed. John Lithgow, Judd Crandall, who's like the neighbor. And then we've got two little kids, Ellie and Gage. One who's 9, one who's like, what? 3?
Yeah, that's about right. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that sounds about right, mate.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they obviously move to this new house sort of in the middle, sort of in the sticks, but obviously with, a massive main road going by with like trucks flying by. But yeah, they pretty much introduce us straight away. Ellie sort of goes out into the woods and there's like this procession of children all wearing like animal masks, taking like a dead dog to the pet cemetery. And then again, a bit of kind of exposition here where Rachel seems to kind of almost know what they're doing. Like, oh, they're doing a procession for the obviously taking a dead dog somewhere or something. She tells Ellie to go inside, but Ellie gets out there and goes and have more of a look. That's when she meets Judd Crandall, he's just milling about in the pet cemetery, you know, just chilling out.
He's where I hang, watch the leaves fall. Bless him. He doesn't like. I actually kind of preferred because people tend to really like the Judd in the old film because of how this episode's like chewing the scenery. He was sort of very over the top. I think John Lithgow played him way more believably. But maybe
the dude who played Judd in the last Pet Sematary is matey boy from the Munsters, right?
I don't know.
Let's say yeah.
Yeah, he definitely is. Yeah. I think we get a couple of whispers around this point, maybe. Maybe not yet. I think it's the university stuff where after the guy dies. So I think Lewis, this is his first day on the shift, right?
Yep. First day on the shift. Yeah.
Someone says there's blood coming out of his head and they wheel in this guy. Quite gory. He's got knocked off his bike or something. His brain's hanging out of his skull.
Yeah.
He's trying to bring him back. This is day one.
This is day one, exactly. Are you feeling stressed about this? Well, a little bit. Here's a man with his head brain hanging out.
Yeah.
Save him.
Obviously, he sort of dies from blood loss and his boss is like, it's not a good start, is it?
Writing it down.
Yeah.
Jesus. One day, one dead.
Wow. They wipe off the board that says 1,200 days since the last person died. Zero.
And you've done it already. So yeah, but he's pretty much, so the kid dies, but Lewis is like, Is it Lewis or Louis?
Lewis.
Lewis. Lewis is almost...
Louis?
Hey, King Louis! he's almost immediately haunted by this dude. Like, this dude just goes, I'm going to be a fucking ghost now.
This guy wants to be a ghost so bad. Like, he dreamed about it. He's just waiting for that moment to pop out.
And he's a ghost. And not only is he a ghost, like, he knows about the Pet Sematary. Like, when did he get the... When did he get the dressing? When did he get the information given to him? He must have been dead for a second. Yeah. Someone's whispered in his ear. Now you're a ghost. Tell him all about the Pet Sematary. Tell him not to go there. Tell him not to venture beyond. Tell him not to.
All right, hang on a sec.
All right, hang on a sec. I'm trying to take it in. I've been dead a second. My brain's still hanging out.
I'm dead. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's I think the idea is he's not that one person, is he? He's not the spirit of that guy. He's
The
cemetery or some sort of force of good.
It's a bloody cemetery.
Just something in it. So then I think he gets, Lewis has some bad dreams.
He goes for a walk
through the door. What did you think to that effect? Where it's like the door in the middle of the woods.
Yeah, that was all right, wasn't it?
It's all right.
Kind of too bad. I've seen that a lot. Films are doing that a lot lately. There was a bit of that in Shazam. I like it.
Okay.
Door. Go into a door. It leads somewhere mental.
Yeah.
Good time.
See more of that, please. So, the impression is that the Pet Sematary is bad. That's the impression that the dream gives.
Don't venture beyond the Pet Sematary because it'll mess you up and it'll mess everyone you love up.
Yeah, and then he wakes up and he's like, oh, bloody hell, what happened? That was a weird dream. And he looks at his feet and he goes, I've stepped in dog shit
and come straight back to bed. What a dirty bastard. Yeah. You've got to wipe your feet.
Yeah.
So obviously it suggests that he has been out milling about in the cemetery, chilling out with no shoes on, which is dangerous. Could be broken glass around or just a sharp stick.
Round glass or...
But he's a doctor, it's fine.
Yeah. I think it's around here that Church bites the big one, right?
Yeah, so I think we sort of get introduced to... So Ellie's sort of building up a little bit of a relationship with Judd as well, like a bit of a connection there going on, and sort of like he's almost like a grandfatherly figure.
Yeah.
She likes him. Impressive. She goes to his house and they sort of talk about various stuff. Does she break in?
She does, yeah. He steals his candlesticks or something.
Yeah, so you kind of get a bit of a history of Judd, why he's on his own, and that sort of says obviously he used to have a wife. But yeah,
she's not like a husband.
Yeah,
yeah.
Not long after that, we obviously one thing we haven't mentioned is that the family have a cat, a kind-natured cat, kind of a fluffy one. Mm-hmm, yeah, mm-hmm. Called Church, named after Winston Churchill. Because why wouldn't you? Stephen King.
Was he called Church in the... I can't remember. Carry on.
I think so. Well. And not long after... And it's Halloween. Everyone's getting ready to sort of go out and trick-or-treating. And then Judd finds Church's dead body. He's been smashed. He's been crushed. He's been flattened by one of those trucks that drive at 120 miles per hour going past. I'm not surprised, to be honest.
Yeah. But then... Judd is like, don't worry about it, mate.
Yeah, so obviously Judd, he feels a bit of responsibility, I guess, towards Ellie. He's kind of looking out for her, and he's like, I've heard about this ancient burial ground, mate. I've had a bit of a run-in with it in the past, and it didn't really work out well, but this time will be different, I promise. All right?
Yeah. So this is the sort of the bad special effects bit you're talking about, right? Where they go... That night, they meet up in the burying church, and then just like, let's go up to the ancient burial ground. And he takes them up, and he takes them up to like this weird cliff edge, and it's like this so much like fog machines and spooky sounds. It's like skulls and stuff under the water. And
it looks like my mum does like a Halloween party every year, right? And she always goes, come on, bring the kids, it'll be quality. And sometimes she goes all out.
Yeah,
like she really like smoke machine, spider webs, cobwebs all over everything, skulls hanging off.
Yeah,
basically, it looks like my mum's had a go at just a normal cemetery, and she's made it look Halloween-y.
Yeah, that's exactly what it's like. And then it's a bit where they go up these stone steps, and then we can tell the walls is painted carved foam. Like, it looks it looks like a set of from Gladiators. Like, it looks like...
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
I don't know, like some cheap TV show sort of stuff going on.
Yeah.
But then, I mean, it's all right. I mean, they bury Church. At one point, it looks like he's beating the body up with a stone. But I think he's actually using it to dig stuff up.
Yeah, so he like uses a stone to dig and kind of like...
Yeah. But then they do that, and then it gets back home again. We sound like we're speeding through this, but this is the pace of the film. Like it is, it just slams through these things.
It
so
does
quick.
Slam through it, and also, do we get? I think something we didn't quite get much of in the previous film was the discussion about the Wendigo, the spirit that kind of like lives in and around the ancient burial ground, and you know, has got a bit of a history with.
So I was looking forward to that in this film. So I was like, that's a really good part of the book. That the whole, it feels like they're going to some barrier between different worlds when they go to that other graveyard. But it was a barrier to some 1990s TV game show, Maze Room or something. Like it just didn't sell me on the scariness of it at all.
No, definitely not.
Yeah. So Take Me to Church comes back the next day.
Take me to church. I'm coming back to life from the burial ground.
Church is alive from the burial ground, and he's all messed up. He's like
he's been dipped in Marmite.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, his eyelids are droopy.
I mean, this is good because obviously that's a real cat. They have not They've not got like an animatronic, but make your cat fuming. So basically, like, smear it in loads of shit, and then like, just don't let it in when it wants to come in for about an hour.
It's a good
and
then cat actor. Like,
great cat actor. Yeah. I think during the premiere of this film as well, the cat was there and had a tie on.
That's a cool cat. Most cats don't like to be sort of handled and moved around and stuff. But this one had like 2 hours of makeup every day or something.
Yeah. Something's wrong with Church. Church comes back. He's like aggressive.
He's making some stupid noises. He's making like noises from Gremlins too. Like they aren't like.
Late
if your cat was making noises like that, I'd be like, "Yeah, you need to burn that thing now. It's not.
You need to fuck off, right?
It's not normal." Even like Ellie and stuff, just like, "Oh, hey, Church. Oh, you stink like burial ground or whatever." But like, if it's making noise like that, if it looks like that. You would know.
Again, these are all things that kind of the characters go about like they're just doing general stuff, going shopping or something. They're trying to brought a cat back to life.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They've literally brought a cat back to life. And Lewis is like a bit like, oh, bloody hell. That's mental, that is.
Wait, isn't it? Best.
And he's a doctor. He's a fucking doctor.
Yeah. Best to go see Judd about this, I guess.
Yeah.
Hey, Judd. And then Judd says, oh, yeah, I had a dog once and it worked for that too. So In the book, there's more sort of history of the dog. It wasn't evil. I think he just went a little bit strange towards the end of its days, and he had to put it down twice or something. Chirrut gets to the point where they're like, "This is freaking me out now. I'm just going to kill it." But he can't kill it because it's a family pet. So he decides to sort of drop it off in the woods somewhere.
Yeah,
and it looks at him like, "You son of a bitch!
You sick bastard!"
Yeah.
So yeah, because obviously he tries to euthanize him first, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And then he's just like, can't do it, you know. Because I think Church scratches Ellie and then it attacks Gage. And he's
he's in the bed.
In the bed. I've had enough of you now.
Yeah.
And then
weird on the bed.
And then Lewis tells Ellie that the cat ran away. Ran away, mate. If only you knew the truth.
I had almost this exact same thing happen when I was a kid. So we had a cat called Yam.
Yam?
Nickname for, like, short for Yamaha, because my dad was a big bike fan, motorbike Good. Fan.
Like it. I like it.
A tabby cat called Yam. Yam disappeared for 2 weeks, and then we found, like, a flattened Yam. And then we were burying flattened Yam in a bin bag in the back garden. And then Yam turned up. Our actual cat turned up and was like, "What are you doing?" And then we were burying his random fucking cat in our garden.
So yeah, it must have looked pretty similar then.
Well, I mean, it's flattened to the point of like... we were pretty sure it was Yam. I never got to see it. But cat turned up. No, our cat turned up and it's just like, "I'm back."
It was just like, "What are you doing?"
Yeah.
What must it have thought? Yeah. What on earth are you doing?
Yeah.
Exactly, did you finish the burial of the flat cat?
I think Dad just put it in the bin. I can't remember.
Not worth a burial now. It's not you, Yam. Right, get it in the bin.
Dug it up.
Get it in the waste paper basket.
Yeah.
Not in a bag. Just in the front room. Yeah.
I can't remember, maybe buried it. I can't remember. I was very young. But we didn't have to put the returned Yam down or anything. He turned out to be all right. Lived for many years. But Church, he's off. And it's birthday time for Ellie.
Hmm. She's turning like 9 or 10 or something. And this is the point where, like, you know something bad's going to happen now.
Yeah.
At this point of the film, because there's a lot, like, the cats, we see the cat sort of coming back in the road. We see, like, more close-ups of the large trucks sort of driving past really fast. It is like the early part of an episode of Casualty where you know something's going to go bad.
Yeah, pre-credit scene.
It's just being set up.
Yeah.
And obviously, again, this is the part where the film is obviously trying to make you think that it's going to be Gage who gets mowed down by having him sort of run towards the road when Ellie's out there looking at Church. And you think, you know, he's going to run out after and he's going to get flattened. But no, they flip it on its head. They had you there, didn't they? And the tanker obviously slams on its brakes, spins out of control, starts rolling towards, you know, Gage. But Lewis manages to save him at the last moment. Some real dodgy green screen here where, like, they're superimposed. Looks like it's been made on YouTube. They've been superimposed over this tanker rolling towards them. And then Ellie turns around and sees it coming towards her and gets absolutely splooshed.
Yes.
Well, you say that, but she just, like, it ends up in a bush. Like,
yeah. So I think she should have been way more messed up than that. I know, like, staple her head back together and her eye gets messed up and stuff. But, I don't know. So, Ellie's dead. The family's grieving. We have the funeral scene. The mum and the son say they're going to get open house for a bit and they're going to go and stay with the parents for a little bit. It's all happening.
But Lewis wants to stay at the house for, like, a little while. And Judd, at this point, is getting a little bit of a...
He knows. Yeah.
He's getting warnings. He realizes that Lewis is probably going to try and resurrect her.
Yeah.
Because now he's got the taste for the pet cemetery. Yeah. Now he's like, "I've already brought my first cat. What else can I bring back from the dead?"
Still got the shovel.
Still got the shovel. I mean, as luck would have it, my daughter's just died. So
luck would have it, yeah. I was worried I was only going to use that shovel once, but here we go. Shoveling time. He digs up the grave. He has to drug Judd. He has to drug Judd initially.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. He drugs him. So he, what is it? Rehypnol? I don't know.
Maybe, yeah.
again, was this part in the original where he drugs?
Remember him drugging.
Oh, I don't remember it either. It almost seems like a bit OT. Would that really happen? Would you do it?
I do remember them drinking on the porch or wherever it was. So
yeah.
I think maybe he just waited for him to fall asleep in a drunken stupor. And so, yeah, so he takes Ellie up to the grave, does the business.
It all happens pretty quickly, doesn't it? They're coming back from the dead. Like, it's a pretty quick turnaround. Like, it's quite a complicated thing, I think. And I reckon it would take at least 24 hours, maybe longer, you know, at least overnight. But it tends to happen that same night, a few hours later.
Yeah. So here's one thing I would say. So just to sell the book to people. All the bits where he's sort of digging up the grave and he's sort of taking the body, so that's like a full 100 pages of a challenge. All those elements of him stealing a body from a grave, it's not easy. It's not easy for him to do all this stuff. And it really adds to sort of the desperation of the character and what's the grief and sort of.
You've got to dig 6 feet down. That'd knacker you.
And it sort of really emphasizes why the character is doing this stuff and how he can't get over the grief of it, and he's sort of forced to do these sort of, because he's extreme lengths. In here, it's like just like like popping the, like just prying her out. She pops out of the grave, lands in the car, and then the engine's still on, and he drives to the directly to the grave. And then she comes back, and she's just not scary. She's just not scary at all.
She seems like just real tired. Like she's a bit dirty, a little bit like she's been to Glastonbury for 5 days and not had a good, decent shower. But she just seems a bit like, just a bit sleepy and a bit like, all right, Dan, you fucking prick.
Exactly. If it was Gage, you kind of wouldn't know how he's feeling because he doesn't talk yet. He can't vocalize things. He wouldn't know where you stood with him if he was your son.
And like in the original, when Gage was like going full evil, it was pretty scary. Like
when Gage starts telling Judd, like, "I'm gonna fucking cut you," like he gets like really aggressive. That's terrifying.
And he like bites him as well. Like, And then in the morning when he puts her to bed, and in the morning when he wakes up, she's got her little ballet dress on, which
she has a strop in the middle of the living room.
Yeah, because she's obviously undead, so she's not quite got the moves she had before, and she's smashing things off the wall and everything. And he goes, "Come on, stop it!"
Yeah,
loses his temper with her.
And then the family turns up. It's like one step away from being a Adam Sandler comedy, like him trying to hide the thing as the family. Don't look under there.
So obviously throughout this film as well, Rachel, the mother, has been getting spooked by these visions of her dead sister. Which is kind of like, so we've got like two sort of both main characters kind of getting spooked by various different ghosts. And I guess Rachel gets made to think that she like blames herself as well for that death.
Yeah, she hates death or something.
So she bloody hates death. Oh, I hate death.
This is the one good scare I've found in the film, was when it has her. It happens twice. There's two good scares, but they're the same thing, really.
Yeah.
So in the flashback, there's a dumbwaiter that she uses to send food up to her sister who's got bad spine syndrome.
Bad spine syndrome.
And she's not supposed to, because her sister has to get out of bed to get it, and it's just not good for her. But she's scared of her sister. So she uses this dumbwaiter, and then you hear her crawling across the thing, and you just hear this sort of weird crashing noise. And then she opens the dumbwaiter. It looks fine for a second. It's just a food.
Yeah.
And then it suddenly crashes down, and then it's got like Zelda's like broken body on top.
Contorted broken body foot, and that's how she died.
So that was pretty good. I was like, okay, that's interesting. And then the second time it does it is in the house. It's with the bathroom mirror. Like, so you hear exactly the same noise as going across the top. And then she opens the bathroom mirror as if it's the dumbwaiter. She hears the noises of the dumbwaiter moving around behind the bathroom mirror. It's good. And then she looks through, and then she looks up, and then Zelda's body flies, crashes against the thing. Skip. You know when someone's so scared of something, they kind of can become angry or defensive against something? He went, "Fuck off. to the screen quite loud. So
he
like
he walked all the way up to the screen and just went, "Fuck you."
Like me and Dieter were pissing ourselves laughing. Then we can't stop laughing because we're like boys in school, and when you're laughing when you shouldn't be laughing, you just laugh even more. And then other people are laughing as well.
This is a serious piece of cinema.
And it was just fun. And then Skip was a little embarrassed, I think. Peed his pants probably, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's good though. I thought they were quite good jump scares if you like a gag. Yeah.
I thought they were good jump scares. They were better jump scares than like when it just quickly cut to the really loud truck.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good impression.
Yeah.
Exactly all the time. That's a good impression.
So not long after this, Judd turns up at the house basically trying to see if Lewis is all right, and obviously he's being all secretive and being like, "Yeah, everything's fine, mate." Judd obviously thinks something's up, and then as he walks away, sees Ellie in the window looking at him. He's like, "Fair fuck's sake, you done a Pet Sematary on her, didn't you?
Hacky packy crisps."
Oh, you bastard. And he goes back to his house, gets a gun. He's like, "I'm gonna pop a cap in her ass. How are you gonna explain that? Why did you murder that child? Well, she was already dead." Well, yeah, okay, kind of makes sense.
Okay, yeah.
And when, as he's looking, you know, for Ellie,
yeah,
he sees Church, and Church kind of goes, "Aah." And this is when we get like, when Judd thinks that Ellie is in his house, we get the thing. So obviously there's a very iconic scene in the first film where Gage stabs him in the Achilles tendon. Obviously, it looks like that's going to happen again. His leg is seen from underneath the bed. And then, again, they do this stupid thing where they go, "Ah, we got you," where he like kicks the bed out and there's no one under there.
You idiot, thinking that thing was going to happen that didn't happen.
And then exactly the same thing does happen as he's walking down the stairs. Ellie slices him up. And then Ellie's like got the mask on, and then she's like got Judd's dead wife's face.
Yeah.
Looking, so again, that sort of represents the fact that the cemetery obviously takes on all of these personas once the people have been dead. So it is the Wendigo, really, isn't it, right?
I don't know. So in the book, I get the impression that the Wendigo is almost sort of a great, vast Lovecraftian-style thing that doesn't give a shit about anything that's happening here. He just sort of accidentally encounters it whilst he's traveling to the actual cemetery. Here, maybe, because it gives the impression it's more of a sort of a demonic force, but in the other things it's never really been that, I don't think, anyway.
Okay.
But
then she stabs him to death. Like, she got a scalpel. I'm obviously assuming that's her doctor dad scalpel, and she just stabs the living bejesus out of him until he's dead. Till he's dead.
Yeah, he gets killed until dead. And then they go back over to the other house. What's happening here? So
Rachel and Gage sort of come back to the house. She's been trying to get hold of Lewis. She's been on the blower trying to get hold of him. She's obviously worried about him, worried about how what's affecting him with the grief. And obviously he's in this sort of weird state of like, I don't know, why would you explain it, where he's kind of like, I brought her back, didn't I? And then
defend his choices.
Right? Yeah, he's like, I had to. That was it. I think so. I think from this point of view, you kind of get to understand that he wanted just more time with her. It wasn't like he wanted to bring her back and then have her live with them forever.
Yeah,
he just wanted more time with her. Like, he obviously wasn't ready to say goodbye, and even if she came back in a slightly inhuman state, as long as
leave her in the woods,
he could just go and leave her in the woods like he did with Church. Exactly. Yeah. But obviously, Rachel and Gage return at a point where he's not quite ready, and when she sees that Ellie's alive, obviously she's terrified, and she says, "Hug your daughter," which she does. There's a lot of hair brushing going on in this as well, where I think, be careful.
Yeah, pulling out
a lot of hair brush. Where it's like, you got a knot in your hair, I'm just gonna wrench it as hard as I can.
Also, when you do that, you grab the hair. You know what I mean, to take the strain from not pulling on the scalp. But no one seems to do that here. Everyone just seems to be like, I hate your scalp
so much.
Yeah.
And it all kind of like spirals out of control pretty damn quickly, doesn't it? It really doesn't take his time. With Ellie coming back from the dead, it pretty much just goes, she's back from the dead, she's fucking everybody up. That's it. No taking no prisoners.
Yeah. She So Ellie has the mum has that final vision where she is Zelda in the bed.
Yeah,
and then when she comes back to, she's gets attacked by Ellie. I think she fares all right, but I think she has to basically throw Gage out the window to save him, and in that process gets stabbed a few times.
So we're left to think at this point that she's pretty much dead.
Yeah.
At this point, Lewis is over at Judd's place, finds his body, and pretty much turns up while it's all kicking off, right?
Well, yeah. So he catches Gage, and as he goes up to try and help his wife, he gets knocked out of like a plant pot or something.
Yeah.
So this is one of the points where changing the story in this way is kind of ruins the whole point of the story, because Ellie takes the mum to the graveyard to come back as a zombie. And then whilst he's fighting Ellie and he's about to kill her, the mother zombie comes back and kills him. And then they take him and it becomes a sort of like,
I mean, the turnaround time is even shorter now.
Yeah.
Just for the plot. Like, the turnaround time is pretty much like minutes. Like, she had to dig a hole, bury her, put stones on her, leave the bloody place, and then she just came back pretty much immediately.
So this is becoming sort of, it's like a virus, like a bacteria thing, because it's sort of, it's self-created. It's making more zombies. And so the whole thing of Pet Sematary is about how people just can't let go of the dead ones. They just want to be back around, and it's a cycle of grief. So when he brings Gage back in the film and then realizes what he's done to Judd, he gets his son, pins him down, and then has to make the heartbreaking decision of euthanizing his own son, killing him for a second time. But then, in that grief, realizes that Gage has killed his wife, and then decides to bring his wife back. It's a never-ending cycle. He'll never get out of it. And then it ends with, well, don't end the film quite. No, it's the same, yeah. Like, there's his wife is back from the dead, and they start dancing or something at the end. So, I mean, that's like, he will never win. This is Gage's. This is Lewis's big thing, that he can't get over death. He can't accept it. But in this, it's like, no, it's a zombie apocalypse. Like, they're just going to keep doing this now. They're just going to keep growing, and it takes. Like,
but then you think, why isn't it happened before? Then if it's been there for God knows how long, why has it not happened before? If that's the way it works,
yeah.
But yeah, so obviously they kill Lewis, and he comes back. All three of them, what they do? They set fire to Judd's house.
They're like punks. They come back as punks.
I come back from the dead. You know, fuck the establishment, man. I'm going to burn your fucking house down. All right, fuck the police.
And then after this. Pigs. They obviously do the same to Gage. It's quite a nice shot at the end where actually when they're walking towards the car and then Church climbs on top of the bonnet and Gage is inside and it's like, don't know what's going to happen now. They're probably going to kill Gage. But then they're just going to be like a family of dead punks. They're probably going to start banding, go on tour and play with Black Flag or some shit. I don't know.
Yeah, probably. EGM. But yeah, obviously it's quite a, you know, even though I didn't really like the ending, I didn't really like the film, I thought it was quite a good ending, obviously, how...
An ending shot. I like that little ending.
A nice ending shot. Sorry, that's what I meant. An ending shot, and obviously the sound of the car unlocking.
Boop, it's good. Yeah, it's good.
Was a nice, you know, a shit ending, but a nice ending shot. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, I think it works as a little bit of a sting, but it loses something quite powerful about. Pet Sematary is one of the books that people say is their favorite Stephen King book, and I feel like it kind of lost a lot of that. What made that so special? But that's it. And we get the credits.
Yeah.
And then we get the quiz. Imagine if it did that, like the credits, and then there's an actual quiz.
Yeah. I'd like it. I think I'd like it.
Okay.
You can't leave unless you get them all right.
Yeah. And you got to watch it again if you don't. So, number one, what breed of cat is Church?
Like a something, a Russian long fur. I don't know. A Russian long hair. Something long hair.
No. Well, maybe it's a thing, but that's not right. It's a Maine Coon cat.
A Maine Coon cat. Well, there we go.
Yeah.
I was close.
No, number two. What is Stephen King's middle name?
Oh, that's a good question. Is it Lewis?
No. I can ask you like the most sort of like factual questions. No. It's Edwin.
Edwin. Edwin Van der Sar. I didn't know that.
offenders are.
Sorry, Steve.
Number three. When Stephen King was 2 years old, his father left the family under the pretense of what?
Gonna get a pint of milk?
Close. Gonna buy a pack of cigarettes. So he was gonna buy a pack of cigarettes and he just disappeared. Never came back. Number four. What is Stephen King known as in Hollywood circles? Is it A, Stephen the Bling King? Is it B, Stevie Nicks, Knacks, and other assorted curiosities? Or is it C, Stephen King?
Kong. Stephen King? Kong?
Stephen King Kong is correct.
Yeah.
Stephen King Kong.
Okay.
Number five. As a child, King apparently witnessed one of his friends. I've got a question here. Just got a fact. Let me try and reword this. As a child, King apparently witnessed one of his friends. This is horrific. Witnessed one of his friends being struck and killed by a what? Jeez, this isn't a very nice question. One of his friends got struck and killed by something. What was it?
I was going to say a bolt of lightning, but then you said he got struck and killed. Bolt of lightning? Was it? Or a bird?
Jesus Christ, I don't know about a bird.
A car.
A train.
Fuck.
So as a child, he saw a friend get struck and killed by a train.
Stand By Me came about, isn't it?
But he has no memory of the event. And his family told him, after leaving to home to play with the boy, King returned speechless and seemingly in shock. Does make you wonder, like, if that's where, you know, his inspiration for stories and
a lot of trains sort of and from. Shit, like Stand By Me.
The
Wastelands. He loves a good train. There's probably loads more examples.
My dad saw his friend get hit by a train, but he didn't die. He like lost an arm and a leg. And he used to play by the train tracks. We used to play by train tracks. We used to do that thing where you put a coin under the thing and it flattens it out and makes like a 10p piece.
Yeah.
It's dangerous.
Very dangerous. Yeah. Have you got any questions about the film or about Stephen King?
I couldn't find any questions about the film.
I couldn't find any.
Anyway, there was. There was the one about Church being the main king.
That's right. Sorry, mate. Sorry.
The ones I found about the film weren't like questions. Not really asked you actual questions in this. They were like, isn't it interesting that the town of Ludlow was... there was a sign that said Derry on the signpost. I thought that's not a question.
So there was a part in this film during the birthday party, or maybe it was a barbecue.
Yeah.
There was a birthday party. I overheard someone saying, oh yeah, and it turned out the dog had rabies.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Did you hear that?
There was, yeah, so stuff like that. I'm like, that's not really a question. It's like a nice little factual...
Nice little factoid.
Yeah.
I noticed it at the time when I was watching the film, though, you know, because, you know, I had my ears open for a little Stephen King tidbits, but that's the only one I've actually got.
Yeah. I saw the Derry signpost. I think that's the only one I picked up on. Also, there's like... they like put a cat in the ground and it came back to life. I was like, I'm sure that's a Stephen King thing. Yep. So, need to rate the film.
I really don't think I was into it all that much at all. I don't know what's like the lowest rating we've given on this thing.
I don't know actually, because The Unnamable was pretty low for me.
Yeah. Okay. So I don't want to go. You know what I mean? I don't want to. I mean, it was watchable, despite the fact that I was kind of bored. Does that mean that's probably two very different? I'm just completely contradicted myself there. I'm probably going to go for a D.
Okay, I went for a D-. I just thought it was so lazy. It just felt very lazy.
I'm not going to copy you. I'll join you on a D-. I thought D- sounded a bit too harsh. I upgraded it to a D. I'll go with you.
You're going to downgrade it. That's pretty harsh to downgrade something after the choice, because like you made the initial choice. Now I'm thinking about it.
I'm a coward. I'm a coward.
Now that I'm thinking about the film properly, now it's going to get lower.
Yeah, I mean, when I rated it at 5, I've given it 2.5, so that's like a 5 out of 10.
Yeah, that's about right, isn't it?
So I think that is about a D-.
Yeah,
I'd say. I don't know. There we go.
Next week, are we doing Cujo or Alien 3?
So we were going to do Cujo, weren't we? Because we thought it was going to be a nice little sort of double bill as such for Stephen King animal horror. So I guess, should we do Cujo next? And then the week after that, we're probably going to do Alien 3, because that'll be around about just after Alien Day. So the 40th anniversary of Alien. We've obviously already done Alien. We've already done Aliens. So the next place to go is obviously what?
Alien Squared.
Alien Cubed. So
we should do Cube at some point as well.
Yeah, we should. So if we do Cujo, then if we do Alien 3, there's an Alien Resurrection after that, if you're up for it. Yeah. How'd you feel?
It's not really a horror film, is that? I don't remember. I think it's more of an action comedy.
Yeah.
I can't remember. With Ron Perlman.
The Ron Perlman. Hey, yeah. Ron Perlman. Yep. Okay, here we go.
If he's Ron Perlman, I don't want to be Wright Perlman. Okay.
That's good. Okay, I mean, that's a 5 out of 10 as well.
Yeah. Okay, this show is brought to you by Hawk and Cleaver. Head over to hawkandcleaver.com. Become a patron over at patreon.com/hawkandcleaver. Thanks to Kovacs Cowman for our theme music. Thanks to Acast for hosting the show. Thanks to the listeners. If you enjoyed the show, please consider giving us a rating and review in iTunes, and remember to hit subscribe. And thanks to my co-host, Ben, for being a right or a dude.
Thank you, Luke, for also being right or a dude. Cheers, mate.
Nice. That's it.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns. Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.